Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 353, titled Tides of Oil, Money, and Financial Safe Havens. This is being recorded on March 31st of the year 2002. We're going to be examining a number of different items in this program. Let me stress at the beginning that this is a speculative inquiry. Many of the items that I'm speaking about here are very well established, but what I'm going to be taking a look at, what we're going to be taking a look at, concerns not only tides of 20th century capital flow, but also questions of financial liquidity, oil money, financial safe havens, and there's a deliberate pun there, that would be safe haven with a small f, and also Operation Safe Haven, which was the interdicted U.S. Treasury Department operation that was aimed unsuccessfully at interdicting the Nazi flight capital in World War II. That flight capital was the foundation of the Bormann Organization, about which we've spoken so many times. I am of the opinion that the Bush family is the primary element in the Bormann Organization in the United States. I'm going to be making passing references to items that we've talked about in the past, but I will simply be making citations rather than reading many of these items. Listeners are emphatically referred to not only other broadcasts that are available online, but in particular, the detailed annotated descriptions, source descriptions of the past programs. Those are in the process of being reformatted. The programs on September 11th should be reformatted relatively soon. Listeners are encouraged to not only utilize them themselves, but to take both the audio and print files and distribute those as far and wide as possible. We're going to begin with an article that appeared in the New York Times of Monday, March 25th of 2002. This concerns a further inquiry into some names we've looked at before. New names include, in particular, the SAR Foundation, that's spelled capital S-A-A-R. That's a now-defunct foundation in Herndon, Virginia, owned by a prominent Saudi family. In turn, the SAR Foundation overlaps the milieu of Al-Taqwa that we've looked at before. Al-Taqwa, a bank of the Muslim Brotherhood. Al-Taqwa, according to a number of sources involved with Osama bin Laden and the events of September 11th. Al-Taqwa also overlapping the Underground Reich, as we have seen in past broadcasts. We're going to be taking a look also at Khalid bin Mahfouz. Khalid bin Mahfouz has some very strong connections to the bin Laden milieu, also some very strong connections to the Bush milieu, and one of the principal dynamics here concerns flows of capital and flows of oil. We'll be going into that later on. But note again the SAR Foundation, Al-Taqwa, and Khalid bin Mahfouz. New York Times, Monday, March 25th of 2002, article by Judith Miller, dateline Washington, March 24th, headlined, "The U.S. is examining whether donations by two wealthy Saudis indirectly aided terrorism." Federal investigators are examining whether terrorist operations by Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda and other Islamic groups were indirectly financed by at least two wealthy, well-connected Saudis through a maze of foundations, companies, and financial institutions. The widening inquiry, which became public last week with raids in 16 homes, businesses, and charities in Northern Virginia, is focusing on the complex relationships between individuals and entities in at least 18 countries, including the United States, Saudi Arabia, Switzerland, Morocco, Turkey, and Malaysia. Though the inquiry is in its early stages, officials say that it threatens to inject new tensions into the already strained relationship between Saudi Arabia and the United States. While American and Saudi officials have publicly praised the two countries' cooperation in efforts to track terrorist financing, officials said the Treasury Department was increasingly frustrated by the reluctance of the Saudi government to provide information about at least five Islamic charities, among them the Wafa humanitarian organization, suspected of having financed terrorist groups. Wafa was one of the first Saudi-based charities to be identified for its alleged ties to Al-Qaeda by the Treasury Department 6 months ago. To help it decipher the complicated relationships between the groups whose offices were just raided and those that the Treasury Department has already listed as suspected financiers of Al-Qaeda, the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control has drawn up two charts that officials say focus on two entities. One chart traces relationships among a spider's web of groups and individuals associated with the SAR Foundation, S-A-A-R, a now-defunct foundation in Herndon, Virginia, which was owned by the family of Suleiman Abdul Aziz al-Raji, one of Saudi Arabia's wealthiest and most prominent families. The second chart looks at the nexus between SAR entities and individuals and Altaqua Management, a Swiss company that was recently liquidated that federal officials suspect of financing Al-Qaeda. Altaqua, again, something that we've looked at in many programs, including For the Record 335, 336, 338, and in particular 342, 343, and 351 and 352, as well as other broadcasts. Continuing. Officials say that they have not found evidence that SAR Foundation money was linked to Mr. bin Laden or other specific terrorist acts, but they say they are troubled by the connections between SAR and individuals and entities that the government has already designated as terrorist financiers. The SAR Foundation, which was dissolved in December of 2000, was part of an empire run by the al-Rajis that includes banks, poultry farms, clothing companies, and financial institutions. Officials said that at least two of the hijackers of the September 11th attacks had accounts in an al-Raji bank. In addition, they said, the name and Jeddah address of Salah al-Raji, Suleiman's brother, appeared in the telephone book of Wadi el-Hajj, Mr. bin Laden's Texas-based former secretary, who was convicted last year in the 1998 bombing attacks of the two American embassies in Africa. Charity tax records list Dr. Sherif, C-H-E-R-I-F, Sedky, S-E-D-K-Y, an American lawyer who lives in Jeddah, as a trustee and the secretary of the now-defunct SAR Foundation. Interrupting the narrative here, note that the SAR Foundation was dissolved in December of 2000. It was in existence for 17 years, so that would place its origin in 1983, in the early 80s when Ronald Reagan was in office, when George Bush was sitting right behind him as vice president, that's the elder George Bush, and when the anti-Soviet effort against the former Red Army in Afghanistan was in full swing, and that with the assistance of Saudi Arabia, U.S. intelligence, and among other institutions and individuals, Osama bin Laden and his Saudi backers. Continuing. Charity tax records list Dr. Sherif Sedky, an American lawyer who lives in Jeddah as a trustee and the secretary of the now-defunct SAR Foundation. Mr. Sedky is also the representative of another powerful Saudi, Khalid bin Mahfouz, who for many years was the banker to the royal family. Mr. bin Mahfouz was the major donor to the now-defunct Muwafaq Foundation, a Saudi-based charity that the Treasury Department described in November as an al-Qaeda front. Mr. Sedky has denied that any of the foundation's money went to support Mr. bin Laden. In a telephone interview tonight, Mr. Sedky denied wrongdoing or knowledge of wrongdoing. He said he had not been told that the United States government was investigating him, the al-Raji's SAR Foundation, or Mr. bin Mahfouz, or one of his charities. He described his role in the SAR Foundation as peripheral. He said that around 1994, the al-Raji family asked him to go on the foundation's board because the family wanted to close it down. Mr. Sedky said that the foundation held virtually no board meetings, and that he knew little about its donations or gifts. He said he did not know, for example, why the foundation listed $1.7 billion in gifts and donations in 1998, a far greater amount than any year in its 17-year history, or how that money had been spent, or why the foundation reported a net loss of some $9 million when it was dissolved in December of 2000. Note that 1998 was the year of the embassy bombings. $1.7 billion flowed in at that time. Note that by December of 2000, the organization was described as being $9 million in debt. That's a lot of money to be flowing out where nobody knows. Continuing. My entire function, this is quoting Mr. Sedki, who again is the representative now of Khalid bin Mahfouz, formerly represented by James R. Bath, who was one of the initial capitalizers of Arbusto Energy, George W. Bush's first energy company. And people who knew him, as we've looked at in many broadcasts in the past, said that Bath did not have any substantial monies of his own at the time. James R. Bath was, however, the American representative for Khalid bin Mahfouz, as well as the bin Laden family. Continuing, my entire function was to ensure that the rules and regulations about closing down a foundation were followed, he said. The Treasury charts also provide insight into one of the government's major concerns, the nexus between SAR and the Altaqua Group. Among those being investigated are two men whose names appear on the chart of individuals whom officials say have ties both to the bank Altaqua in Nassau, the Bahamas, and the SAR Foundation, the Altaqua Bahamas operation funded in part by six members of the bin Laden family. Now, a couple of other aspects of the recent history of bin Mahfouz, of Altaqua allegedly, and of Al-Qaeda. Bear in mind, again, the key names in that article, Mr. Sharif Sedki, the representative now of Khalid bin Mahfouz, and the overlapping nexuses, if I'm conjugating that right, between SAR Foundation and also Altaqua. Note that SAR Foundation began in apparently 1983. It closed in December of 2000, listed $1.7 billion in gifts and donations in 98, a much greater amount than it flowed in at any time in the past, and that it was $9 million in the red when it was closed in December of 2000. We're going to review an element that we've looked at in several programs. We looked at this in, for the record, 342 and again in 347. Research and translation credit on this article goes to a member of the listening audience. This is from the Swiss German language publication Weltwoche, or World Week, the 51st week of 2001, also the first week of 2002. It has been archived online. Their website is www.weltwoche.ch. The article is titled Terror Trends, Arms Trafficking, and Completely Legal Financial Enterprises, The Connections of Islamic Terrorism Reach into the Power Centers of the West. The main title is Malice in Wonderland. It's by Johannes von Dohanyi. And of the relationship between Khalid bin Mahfouz and the BCCI and bin Laden and the Al-Shifa Pharmaceuticals plant and Altaqua, we read as follows. Now, I realize that this is complex. It's why I'm repeating this from past programs. Multi-billionaire Khalid Salim bin Mahfouz, that's the fellow now who is represented by Sharif Sedki of the SAR Foundation, previously represented by James R. Bath. Multi-billionaire Khalid Salim bin Mahfouz was not merely one of the key figures in the international scandal surrounding the Bank of International Credit and Commerce, the bank used by Muslim fundamentalists, secret services, and organized crime. Bin Mahfouz was also a partner to the bin Laden family, among others, in banking and telecommunications sectors, in the oil business, and in the American pharmaceutical firm Hybridon. Both families are business partners of Saudi financier Gayit Faroun, who likewise played an important role in the BCCI scandal, and who, in the mid-1980s, became embroiled in an abortive covert operation in the Seychelles Islands to buy atomic weapons for Gaddafi. The worldwide bin Laden clan solemnly swears to have broken off any relationship with Osama, yet circumstantial evidence suggests that at least indirect contacts continue. In the book Dollars for Terror, which we've used many times in the past, it has been alleged that in fact no such break ever took place, that this was basically for PR purposes. Continuing with the Weltwoche excerpt, evidence trails also lead to Khalid Salim bin Mahfouz, whose sister, according to CIA statements, is married to Osama bin Laden. Bin Mahfouz is president of the Saudi Sudan Bank, SSB, in Khartoum. Bin Mahfouz appointed Saleh Idris as director of SSB. Idris, in turn, is the official owner of the pharmaceutical Al-Shifa factory, one founded by Osama bin Laden and destroyed in 1998 by American cruise missiles for allegedly being a poison gas factory. Saleh Idris is connected to the Tadiman Islamic Bank. This second largest financial institution in Sudan is part owner of the Al-Shamal Islamic Bank in Khartoum, also founded by Osama bin Laden. On its board of directors sit members of the Faisal Islamic Bank, led by Prince Mohammed Al-Faisal Al-Saud. FIB's parent company is the Bahrain-registered Islamic Investment Company of the Gulf, which is in turn controlled by the Dar al-Mal al-Islami. DMI stands as the most important Saudi finance vehicle for the furthering of international Islamic fundamentalism. Just one of many threads, or merely a coincidence? The Saudi International Islamic Relief Organization, funded generously by DMI, resides in London at the same address as the Bin Mahfouz-owned International Development Foundation, or IDF. Into the IIRO allegedly flowed money of the aforementioned Al-Taqwa management of Lugano, Switzerland. It is certain that Osama bin Laden earlier received money from IIRO. Coincidence? And, again, I do not think this is a coincidence, but in terms of analyzing what has taken place in connection with September 11th, I think it is very important to, in some ways, move beyond, on the American side, the figure of George W. Bush, whom I believe essentially to be a puppet. I don't think he has any real power, although he certainly, for a lot of people, appears to be a beloved icon. Sort of the Marlboro Man versus the Wolf Man, which are the icons of September 11th. Bush, the Marlboro Man, and Bin Laden, the Wolfman. What's really important to understand are the institutional connections that bind the Bushes and the Bin Ladens and the Bin Mahfouzes. Those institutions are not only oil-based, but also finance-based. And I want to caution again that people should not oversimplify the events of September 11th. This is a very, very complex event. And I think that whereas some people are inclined to say, well, there are obviously connections between the corridors of power in this country and elements of the intelligence community and bin Laden and the bin Laden milieu, that this, therefore this was a government provocation, or those on the other hand who were saying, well, this simply couldn't be, there couldn't be any conspiratorial aspects to this. I think this is an oversimplification. One wants to understand not only international finance, but also what Richard LaBaviere in the book Dollars for Terror referred to as the Baklavization of American foreign policy, in which very powerful but competing interests occupy different layers, and a whole chapter in the La Bevière text was called, Is There a Pilot on Board the U.S. Aircraft? Things binding the Bin Mahfouzes, the Bin Ladens, and the Bin Bushes, as I've said, are oil, money, capital flow, and also, as I've said in the past, the Underground Reich. And I believe it is the Underground Reich and its economic component, the Deadly Bormann Organization, that pulls the strings of not only George Bush, but also the Bin Laden Organization. It has been said by people knowledgeable about Bin Laden that he's really more than anything a front man, that others, including Dr. al-Zawahiri, are the real operators of al-Qaeda. I don't know if that's the case or not, but the significance of September 11th are the institutional connections between the oil business, financial capital flow, and also the Underground Reich. Now, in the book, The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush by Pete Bruton, published in hardcover by Schapolsky Books, and copyright 1992, ISBN number 1-56171-20305, we took a look at the fact that James R. Bath helped to capitalize George Bush's first energy company, Arbusto Energy. That on page 219. On page 221, we took a look at the fact that James R. Bath then became, or was at that time, the Texas representative, the North American representative for the Bin Laden family. And on page 222 of that same text, we took a look at the fact that Bath also was working as the representative for Khalid bin Mahfouz. It was alleged in a text about the BCCI that, in fact, James R. Bath had been recruited into the CIA by the elder George Bush in order to help to secure various powerful Saudis in terms of nailing down their political and economic assets. In the book Fortunate Son by J.H. Hatfield, which has now been reissued in softcover, people who knew James R. Bath at the time said he didn't have much money of his own, and so the speculation is that the capital, which in part went to finance Arbusto Energy, George W.'s first energy company, came from Bath's wealthy Saudi clients, including the Bin Ladens and Khalid Bin Mahfouz. Now, I want to note also in this context that in past discussion of the book Dollars for Terror, by Richard LaBeviere, a text we're going to turn to later, subtitled The United States and Islam. This book, published in softcover by Algora Publishing, it was copyrighted 2000 in its English language edition. The ISBN number is 1-892941-06-6. On page 150 of Dollars for Terror, we took a look at the fact that the Gulf Office was a subsidiary of Al-Taqwa, the milieu of Al-Taqwa, the milieu of the SAR Foundation, and Khalid bin Mahfouz overlap one another. Bin Mahfouz married to Osama bin Laden's sister. We also took a look at the fact that a Saudi charity allegedly involved, another Saudi charity allegedly involved in financing Al-Qaeda activities and with very strong connections to the Saudi power establishment was Mercy International, described in Dollars for Terror as an offshoot of Al-Taqwa. We looked at that in For the Record 351. On page 151 and 152 of Dollars for Terror, accessed in that same broadcast, we took a look at the fact that Mercy International moved its operations to the United States in the 1990s. Specifically, it moved its operations to Michigan. That it in For the Record at 351, we also accessed an allegation from Dollars for Terror that Mercy International's relocation to the United States took place with the assistance of elements of the U.S. intelligence community, specifically the petroleum faction of the CIA. We've also looked in For the Record Program 349, among others, at the dispute that arose between the FBI and the CIA over the CIA's sponsorship of Islamist organizations, including those connected to Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and the importation of some of those elements with the assistance of the CIA or the petroleum faction of the CIA and the Saudis, and those elements' connections in turn to some of the terrorist acts in the United States, including the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993. What we're going to be looking at in the second half of the program is, among other things, a hypothetical explanation for why some of these Islamic elements, bear in mind that they were heavily involved against the Soviet Union in the anti-Soviet Afghan War of the 1980s. These elements inextricably linked with the Saudi power establishment, which in turn, through oil, the purchase of U.S. Treasury bills, and direct foreign investment has a profound influence in the United States. We're going to be taking a look at tides of 20th century capital flow, tides of 20th century petroleum flow, and in particular, maneuvering in and around the underground Reich. This is going to be a very ambitious second half of the program. I'm going to do the best I can. By way of understanding one of the things that the United States is up against, and one of the ways in which I feel we are blowing it big time, and this is an area where people can take a good look in the mirror. This is where the average American meets Al-Qaeda and the underground Reich. And this is where, in terms of analyzing September 11th, this is where the average American and the American people as a whole, with some exceptions, bear some responsibility for September 11th. San Francisco Chronicle, Thursday, March 14th of 2002, and this is not to be misunderstood as buying into the anti-American rhetoric that has been extant in certain circles, but rather to understand in terms of functional analysis basically how people screw themselves and how the United States is screwing itself. San Francisco Chronicle, Thursday, March 14th of 2002. What we're looking at here is a flow of oil into the United States and a flow of money out. Article by Carolyn Lockheed. It's headlined, Fuel Bill Runs Out of Gas, Dateline Washington. Amid cries that soccer moms would be forced to abandon their tank-like SUVs and that their six-foot husbands would be crammed into tiny, purple people-eating European microcars, the Senate overwhelmingly rejected higher fuel economy standards for cars, sport utility vehicles, and light trucks. The 62-38 vote yesterday to leave any new gas mileage rules up to the Transportation Department ended chances that Congress will raise fuel efficiency standards for passenger vehicles last increased more than a decade ago anytime soon. Basically, this is suicidal because it is our dependence on foreign oil, and specifically Saudi oil, that has helped to make us vulnerable to the events of September 11th. That's basically why we've become the Saudis, sort of the Gurkhas for Saudi Arabia, and why we're, to a large extent, in the position that we're in. The Saudi power, economic power, and political power over the United States has to do with, first of all, oil. And that is going to be dramatically increased as a result of the failure of the Senate to pass these regulations. And in turn, I think the average American, the average gas-guzzling American, bears some responsibility for the events of September 11th. In addition to this, the Saudis have purchased and continue to finance a lot of the debt that was run up by the Reagan and Bush administrations in the 1980s. Turning to the book Dollars for Terror, and we're going to be talking about one of the elements of Saudi economic leverage. Another major American asset, the royal family, that's of Saudi Arabia, is becoming more and more involved in speculation and deal-making and continues to invest in American treasury bills. In recent years, the murky way the great Saudi families combine business and politics has directly fed the progress of the Islamist movements. This has been a determining factor in the current mutation of several of these movements, as the Saudi ambiguity has allowed for many Afghans to be rehabilitated. The latter have by no means laid down their weapons, and they pursue the holy war today by means of criminal businesses. They are found in the traditional sectors of American crime, money laundering for drug and arms dealers, as well as in the new branches of organized crime through the Islamist mafias and the ethnic religious mercenary bands. This recent evolution has not been achieved only through underhand maneuvers, but has been given semi-official and benevolent support from the Saudi and American secret services that are always inclined to make use of Islamists and their never-ending wars, wars against international communism, then today the new commercial wars in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, particularly Central Asia, where the Taliban is a major player in the new great game in progress. And we're going to continue with our analysis of Saudi economic influence in the United States, not only oil, but their financing of America's foreign debt and direct Saudi investment. And we're going to tie this in terms of presenting an analog with past events. The programs I've recorded over the years are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email mail at spitfirelist.com. Visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. By the time you hear this program, there will be a detailed annotated description of the program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Be sure to follow the links in that description to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available for download and or streaming on Real Audio. The first airing of each For the Record program takes place at 9 p.m. on Monday night on KKUP. Visit their website for instructions on how to listen at www.kkup.com. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 353, Tides of Oil, Tides of Money, and Financial Safe Havens. This has been recorded on March 24th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.